It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
A new week, a new month, maybe a new beginning for all of us as we head on into the summertime, or at least the unofficial start of the summer. Getting a little closer to that, certainly. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital. Streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Viewable by those of you who care to run that risk by watching us on Twitch. We're glad to have you nevertheless. My name is Craig Way. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We occupy this airspace from 10 a.m. to noon, Monday through Friday. We, including my co-host, Jeff Howe, who, as I look through the glass, is putting the finishing touches on a brand new edition of the Blitz podcast. And he's in there with Rod Babers and with Matt Butler, and he'll join us momentarily as they finish up that. So we'll get to Jeff here in a moment. We'll review the weekend. Of course, always with us, our erstwhile producer, our man behind the glass and the major domo in all things important when it comes to Flex ATX and host of the Thursday Night Flex. When it airs on Thursdays, that is. Yeah. That would be Jonathan John Donaldson, Jay Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniel. How are you this morning?
Good, and thanks for repping Flex, because it gives us weight when a guru likes you, like, shouts us out. So.
You ended up having a program last Thursday, since the Longhorns lost the baseball game, their Big 12 tournament opener, so they played elimination game Thursday, and then you had a show Thursday night.
Yeah, I had a show, basically getting ready, because no summer 707s with Memorial Day weekend, but a lot of high school baseball and a lot of road tripping. A lot of road trip.
Well, I'm going to save Snoop's story for his sojourn down to the Coastal Bend coming up in a few minutes, because I want Jeff in here to hear this as well. It's kind of interesting, put it that way. So that's coming up. To let you know what's coming up on the program here in just a few minutes, we're going to have for you, these are some conversations, a series of conversations I had yesterday. Had the opportunity to, as I do every year, to watch the NCAA baseball tournament selection show with the Longhorn baseball team in the clubhouse yesterday, and then an opportunity to visit with some of the players and with head coach David Pierce. So we'll hear some of those conversations. We'll take a look at the Field of 64. So we'll do that. But you'll hear some of the conversations with the players here in a few moments. In the 11 o'clock hour, conversation I have with David Pierce. We'll have that for you early in the 11 o'clock hour. Sandwiched in between those two elements of baseball, the other things that we have for you include, but are not limited to, the following. At the bottom of the hour, in our first notebook session of the day, normally it's on Monday. Monday, of course, was a holiday. So we bring it to you on Tuesday. Mike Roach, recruiting editor of Horns 24/7, joins us to talk about football happening the way that it does, and the upcoming visits coming up, recruiting weekends, and things of that nature. So we'll have that for you as well. We'll have an inconceivable segment. There's some inconceivable things to discuss. So we'll do that coming up at the later on this hour. And then, like I said, David Pierce next hour as well. We do make our Specs text line available to you, 512-337-3776, 512-337-3776. There's a, Jim from Lago Vista, who has contributed in the past to a couple of inconceivable items, has one for us, so I may get to that. The Colonel Craig Flower says, dadgum C-dub, long plank after the long weekend. Now, it wasn't that long from this end. Maybe for you it was, toward that end. Hope the Colonel's all right. He's got to be fired up. His TCU Horned Frogs, who won the Big 12 Conference tournament over the weekend, are the number 6 overall national seed and one of 3 from the Big 12 Conference who are top 8 national seeds. Now, I know what this is going to do. It's going to bring about a discussion about how can a conference that's the number 2 RPI conference in the country have 3 top 8 national seeds, number 2 Texas, number 6 TCU, number 8 Texas Tech, and only have 4 total teams in the field of 64. And folks are looking at, the SEC with 9, and should Alabama have gotten in, and the ACC, and 8, and all, or ACC 9 and 8. And then in addition to that, not having as many out of that. Well, we kind of warned folks a little bit about this while even before going to Oklahoma City, that teams were slipping. Baylor was sliding. Kansas State then kind of had this late surge. And we'll get to all of that coming up. But it was disappointing for the conference. It was disappointing certainly for Baylor, who stood 44 in the RPI and didn't get in. Kansas State had that elevated RPI because of that poor non-conference schedule, but they finished very, very hot. Maybe if they had won one more game in the tournament, if they'd won that elimination game against TCU to get to the finals, maybe it would have been enough to get them over the top. Maybe not. They weren't in the top 5, the first 5 out. So they might have had to have won the tournament no matter what. But those were some of the themes that came out of it. We'll run down the field, as I mentioned. But we did want you to hear some of the comments. This was right after the field of 64 was announced. The first bit of conversation here is with Mike Antico, the Longhorn center fielder. And remember, Mike's a grad transfer from St. John's. So this is a new and exciting opportunity for him to get a chance in his final year of collegiate baseball to actually play for a really good team and to play in the NCAA tournament. So that was one bit of conversation we had with Mike Antico.
How do you describe the feeling when everybody's sitting around and you see the name come up on the board?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've been waiting for that moment for a while now. So it's good that we know who we're going up against now, and we can start looking at the matchup. So it's exciting stuff.
What does it mean to you with your road, the way you've traveled it, and coming down here to get a chance to play on a team that's this good, that's seeded that high?
Yeah, to be a top 2 national seed is something else. You know, I don't even know if we expected that, but it's an unbelievable, feat for us, and it puts us in a really great spot to go all the way with it.
What was your takeaway from the 4 games you guys played in Oklahoma City?
There was a lot of adversity there, but I think everything happens for a reason. It made us hungry, so now we go into this regional with that hunger that we need.
And now with teams come in, obviously you guys don't know that much about the teams. How excited are you to get out there and, I guess, face Southern first?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing I want to know is who they're pitching Friday night. So I guess we're going to take a look at that and see what we got ahead of us.
Spoken like Drew Hitter. I want to see who they're pitching Friday night first when you take a look at that. And it actually will be Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock before the start times were announced. So it'll be Friday at 1 o'clock. And I know that's a change for some Longhorn fans who are used to the Friday night game. Television controls that, and the decision was made that game would be played at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon. Obviously, you'll hear it here on the Horn on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260. We'll begin at 12:45 with the airtime of the first pitch at 1 o'clock. Now, that's Mike Antico. Another guy, position guy, is the DH, Ivan Melendez. Ivan struggled at the Big 12 tournament. That was quite apparent. He had one hit the weekend and I believe struck out 8 times during the course of that. But I'll tell you another thing about Ivan, and a lot of folks didn't know it. He didn't say anything about it. The team said nothing about it, but I knew about it from being around them. And I did mention in the Saturday broadcast, dude was sick as a dog, had a stomach virus, and well, I'll let you hear from him because he was really sick, especially Thursday and Friday,
And then it felt a little bit better on Saturday. But here's the thought about getting a fresh opportunity for a guy who was having to fight off a stomach bug, DH Ivan Melendez.
How are you feeling? I know that was kind of tough on you physically out there.
This past weekend, I was just very weak. You know, I think I had like a stomach bug or something. I was puking like four times the last couple games, just trying to fight through it. Obviously, it wasn't my best performance. Don't want to make excuses. Just getting ready to get back to work this week and then go from there.
How difficult is it when you're feeling physically that poorly when you're trying to concentrate what you got to do with the plate?
I mean, at first I was just kind of like, you know what, mind over matter. But I mean, at some point you kind of just notice that it did have some effect on you. But after then, you know, I'm one of those guys that just likes to fight through it. But I mean, towards the end it just came out and I just couldn't handle it. But yep, that's about it.
Well, now that you feel good again, I guess everybody's pretty excited to see the team name come up on the board, number two seed and all that.
I mean, we're pretty excited. We knew we were going to be ranked somewhere up there, but just to see our competition, I think we're pretty excited.
Would it be safe to say that you're excited to get an opportunity feeling physically better to get back out there again?
Yeah, I'm definitely blessed to get that second chance. You know, if that was, you know, like some of those past teams where that was their last tournament, you know, I definitely would have been feeling a lot worse about myself. But knowing that I get a second chance at it, I feel a lot better. So,
Point is well taken, because you think of all the other teams who their season ended last week in conference tournament play, or even the ones who didn't have a conference tournament, like in the Big West or the Big Ten or the Pac-12, those leagues that did not have conference tournaments and their seasons just ended. I saw a tweet from Andy Thomas, the outstanding hitter from Baylor, thanking Baylor fans. Very nice move on his part for all of that, and I know he felt bad about it. By the way, we should point out, what's the best way to describe this? I think the way it was described for the NCAA basketball tournament, Baylor is a COVID alternate. They're the first team out. So if a team does have to pull out, and as I think it was Virginia Commonwealth had to do it, if a team or whoever it was, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, the NCAA basketball tournament, it'll come to me in a second. But the team that if a team has to pull out due to a COVID issue, Baylor would be inserted in. But, you know, it's at this point with society recovering and with teams being fully vaccinated by now, most of the teams I think are, that there's probably very little chance that they'll get in, but they are a COVID alternate on that. And Ivan Melendez made a good point when he said, you know, I'm thankful to have another opportunity, because he was sick and didn't do well and all that. Now a chance to get out and have a fresh start with a brand new season here with the baseball tournament. And then there's Tristan Stevens, who in the last 3 weeks has been the Longhorns' most consistent starting pitcher. In fact, you make the case, really, that he's been their most consistent pitcher, period, and pitched very, very well, did a heck of a job in the Thursday afternoon elimination game to get the win against Oklahoma. There's a guy who's been so tough that start. Now, we don't know yet when Tristan will pitch. There's a decent chance that the rotation may stay the same, and I'll have more on that in a moment. But with regard to Tristan and the fact that he's been on a roll and now he gets the opportunity to pitch in a regional, that was pretty exciting, starting with being there in the clubhouse with his teammates and seeing the Texas name come up on the board. So how exciting was it to see the team name come up with everybody?
It was awesome. You know, I think that kind of just shows the body of work we put in all season. And, you know, to see that number two national seed, it kind of just shows, you know, what this team's capable of.
You guys were pretty calm and relaxed during that whole thing, even when it came up the number two. Is it partly because you expected it to be that? Right?
Yeah. I mean, we're a confident group of guys, you know, and we understand that what we've been through and what we're capable of. And so just seeing that number two seeing kind of solidified the confidence that we have with our guys.
How do you feel right now with the way you're going? Your numbers obviously show the role that you've been on. Does it feel a lot different for you than earlier in the year?
Not really. You know, I try to keep the same mentality and same approach every time I go out there. You know, I can't control the results or how the batters handle what I'm doing. But at the end of the day, if I go out there with the right mindset, you know, the ball goes in their hands.
Obviously, You guys haven't seen any of the teams that are coming in, so I have a feeling it doesn't matter to you who you get the ball against.
No, it doesn't matter for me personally. You know, whether it's a team that likes righties or likes lefties, you know, I'm ready for the challenge, and I know what I can bring to the table.
Yeah, I'm certain of that. And whenever he gets the ball, be it Friday, Saturday, you know, whenever it might be, I know he's looking forward to it. Which brings us to it to a couple of points with regard to the tournament field itself. The Colonel King Craig Flowers says, you're right, it wasn't long on that blank. He said, Army in Lubbock, don't sleep on Army. UT knows, absolutely. The United States Military Academy at West Point comes with a purpose in mind. They have a mission. They have their stated goal, their objectives to achieve, and they're on the baseball field, and they're tough. And I was thinking back about this when I was talking to somebody. We were looking at the tournament projections when I was up at Oklahoma City, because I thought D1Baseball.com did a good job of updating them every day. They were updating it, fresh information going on with that. Baseball America had theirs going on. So we were looking at all this up there in Oklahoma City, and for 2 or 3 days at least, maybe longer, the projections had Army coming to Austin. And, you know, for those who were not here in 2009, it was kind of, oh, okay, all right, you know, or those who were not, you know, affiliated with the University of Texas, some of the fellow broadcasts, my friend or my friends, fellow broadcasters in the Big 12. Oh, okay. Army, we're all sitting around looking at stuff like that. For those of us who remember it and were in the moment at the time, it was like, ooh, wow, Army, tough guys. Not just because they're Army guys, the what they did to go out and you know, they get so much credit, and rightly so, with what they do in football, with their option game, with football and how they shrink the game, running the clock and all that. To a lesser extent, it or a different way of doing it, it's almost kind of how they do it in baseball as well. They short it by being incredibly sound, fundamentally sound, and their pitching doesn't make an awful lot of mistakes. So you have to take advantage of the times that you do have the mistakes, and you have to pitch and play defense very well yourself. So we were talking about that. Somebody said, wasn't that the team that was in the 25-inning game with Texas back? And I said, no, but they were in that regional because Texas played Army in the first game on Friday night of the regional and beat them 3-1. Army hung around. We're like, okay, yeah, these guys are pretty tough, whatever. And then Army had to go into an elimination game and with Texas State and on Saturday and won that. Texas then, of course, had the epic 25-inning game with Boston College on Saturday night that started at 6 o'clock in the evening and finished after 1 o'clock in the morning. And it was, you know, the stories behind that are legendary, the fans and all the different things that happened in Austin Wood, obviously, with 169 pitches thrown and all of that sort of stuff. Army stayed alive by eliminating Texas State. And then on Sunday, Army eliminated Boston College, which Boston College had to turn around after playing that 25-inning game, turn around at noon the next day and play. And it was a bang-bang game and went down to the end, but Army won that game. So then Army plays Texas, and it was like this survival battle. It went back and forth and back and forth, and they get to the bottom of the ninth, and Texas was the home team for that particular one. And if Army had won that game, they would have had an if-necessary game on Monday, and Army would have been the home team. It's 10-10 in the bottom of the ninth, and the Longhorns load the bases, and Preston Clark hits a walk-off grand slam, and Texas wins. But you talk about being pushed. And then they got pushed again by TCU in the Super Regional. Texas won that one to get to Omaha, and then went all the way to the national championship before losing to LSU. So those are memories folks have of Army, and Army will be in Lubbock this weekend, and North Carolina will be in Lubbock this weekend. So it's a tough region there that Texas Tech will be hosting, but I know the Red Raiders are happy about being a top eight national seed. Same thing with the Horned Frogs. I think we all expected TCU to be a top eight national seed after their performance in the conference tournament. But looking at the field, you know, Arkansas, no question, no doubt about it, the number one overall seed. They've been number one all season, at least certainly since like the, you know, maybe the third week of the season, overtaking Ole Miss there and didn't look back. It is that you have those intriguing wrinkles that come out with the tournament field. Nebraska, which of course was coached by Dave Van Horn before he left for the Arkansas job, and Nebraska, a tough, gritty team that won the Big Ten. So that's what's going to go on in Fayetteville. The other team's Northeastern, which won the Colonial, and New Jersey Institute of Technology. New Jersey Tech, the Highlanders from Newark, New Jersey. I was really kind of hoping that they might get to Austin just so I could have fun with it with Mike Antico about it. We were joking about that since he's from Colts Neck, New Jersey, but they'll be in Fayetteville. And the winner of that, to get the winner of the region in Ruston, Louisiana, for the first time, Louisiana Tech gets those ones. We mentioned Conference USA was going to be tough this year, and they got four teams or three teams into the field. Louisiana Tech is hosting with the 2-seed North Carolina State, the 3-seed Alabama. That was one of the more controversial selections, if you will, that they were one of the bubble teams that got in, and then Rider, the 4-seed. Also on that side of the bracket, the number 9-seed Stanford, along with UC Irvine, Nevada. Remember where they played Texas tough when they came to Austin, and North Dakota State, which got past Oral Roberts to win the Summit League. In Lubbock, I mentioned Texas Tech, Ann Arbor, and North Carolina. And, oh, by the way, UCLA is the number 2 seed there. So that's a tough region in Lubbock. In Tucson, you have Arizona, the number 5 overall national seed. Oklahoma State is the number 2. I know they weren't real happy about that in Stillwater, but they were happier than they would have been had they been sent to Fayetteville. And for most of last week, it was listed that Oklahoma State was going to be the number 2 seed in Fayetteville. And we were all saying, that's ridiculous. I even said this on the broadcast. It's kind of patently unfair. There's no way that Oklahoma State is the 32nd best team, because that's the way it would work out bracket-wise. It always reminds me of in 2003, Texas was the defending national champion. They thought they would be hosting a region, or at least thought they had a good shot to host a region. Not only were they not hosting a region, or actually they were hosting a region, but they thought they might have a shot at being a top eight. But they were not a top eight. Not only were they not a top eight, their region was matched up with the one in Tallahassee, with Florida State, who was the number one overall seed. So, in essence, you're saying Texas was the 16th best team, which everybody knew wasn't the case. So Texas wins its regional in 03, and they go to Tallahassee, and at the news conference, I'll never forget this, in Tallahassee, they ask Augie Garrido, do you think that it was fair what they did by putting you guys basically the 16th seed? Because Augie was on the phone with the tournament selection committee chairman, which, by the way, was Charlie Carr, the AD at Florida State. And he said, do you really think we're the 16th best team in the country? And the response he got was, well, that's not really how we look at it. And Augie said, how can you look at it any other way? So they win, they go to Tallahassee, and at the news conference, they ask Augie, you know, do you think it was unfair that this happened this way? And he said, absolutely. It was incredibly unfair to Florida State. And he said it with a straight face, and he said, and they will find out. And sure enough, Texas went and swept them. So, you know, it's not only unfair to the team that feels they got seeded too low, it's also unfair to the team that's seeded up there that they would have to deal with a team that a ball club that difficult in the Super. And incidentally, there are folks who feel that that might have happened to Texas, whereas they have a very workable or winnable regional in Austin. It's matched up with the one from Gainesville, Florida, where if it follows through to seeding and Florida wins, Florida could be a very, very difficult super regional opponent. But we're getting ahead of ourselves if you're looking too far at that. In Arizona, the number 5 seed, where they have Oklahoma, the number 2 seed in that region, UC Santa Barbara, the 3, they went to the World Series, I think, 5 years ago in 16, played at Oklahoma State there, and Grand Canyon, the Lopes from Phoenix. In Oxford, you have Ole Miss, the 12 seed, with Florida State, Southern Mississippi, and Southeast Missouri State. Southern Miss, another one of those Conference USA teams. And in fact, I had it right the first time. There were 4 who got in, because another one is in Greenville, where East Carolina is the 13 seed, and they're playing Norfolk State. But Charlotte is the 2 seed and Maryland the 3. In Nashville, Vanderbilt, the number 4 overall seed, playing the Blue Hose of Presbyterian. That's H-O-S-E, Hose, like the nickname for the White Sox, the Pale Hose, H-O-S-E. Don't take it any other direction. Blue Hose, H-O-S-E, as in hosiery, as in socks. That's Presbyterian. Georgia Tech and Indiana State there. And then on the other side of the bracket, obviously, Texas against Southern, Arizona State 2, Fairfield the 3. And we'll get into more about this particular region in the second hour of the program when we hear from David Pierce as well. Matching up, as I pointed out, with the Gainesville Regional, Florida against South Florida, Miami against the Sun Belt Conference champion, South Alabama, South Bend, Indiana. The tournament selection committee finally agreed with what a lot of us were saying all along, including Keith Moreland, that that Notre Dame was not deserving of a top eight, and they didn't get it. They're the number 10 overall seed. They have Central Michigan there, Connecticut, which won the Big East, and Michigan with its 88 RPI in a year where RPI kind of got skewed for leagues that did not play non-conference games, and that was the Big Ten. In Starkville, you have Mississippi State against Samford, Virginia Commonwealth, and Campbell, the Camels of Campbell. In Fort Worth, TCU against McNeese, a tough McNeese ball club that ran the field there in the Southland tournament to win, beating Sam Houston State in the championship. Oregon State, the 2, and Dallas Baptist, the 3 there. In Columbia, Old Dominion, another Conference USA team, is a 1 seed in the region, not hosting. They didn't submit a bid, but they're the 1 seed in Columbia with Jacksonville in there. They are 16-32 going in. They won the A-Sun. South Carolina, the host, is the number 2 seed in Virginia, the number 3. In Eugene, you have Oregon, the 14 seed, playing Central Connecticut State. Gonzaga, which many thought was deserving of a regional, taking on LSU, Paul Maneri, swan song, he's going out after this year. And then finally, in Knoxville, Tennessee, the 3 seed against Wright State, and Duke, which won the ACC tournament against Liberty. So there it is. There's your tournament field. Before we get to the break, my co-host is here, fresh from just laying voice to microphone and digital recording now done and being ably edited. I look over in the studio where Matt Butler is doing that, but he's the pride of Northwest Williamson County. Proud graduate of Florence High School.
You're damn right.
And former All-District offensive lineman of Florence. Buffaloes, you know him best for his work. Horns 24/7. Jeff Howe. Good morning. How was your weekend?
I had a sunburn at some point, Craig.
Did you really?
Yeah, feeling on my face and on top of my head. I got sunburned at some point.
Who did I see? Oh, Kyle Peterson on the selection show. Kyle had been in the sun a little bit there at the SEC tournament.
Other than that, I'm doing great. Having a great morning. Good Longhorn Blitz podcast. We're a day behind Blitz subscribers, but as soon as I get the thumbs up from Matt next door, we'll get that thing published.
Good.
Ready to go.
Okay. All right. So we'll take the break. When we come back, Mike Roach, Horns 24/7, will join us. So we gave you just the overview of the bracket. In the next hour, you'll hear my conversation with David Pierce. And we'll get into some more detail about the teams here in Austin, as well as some other things with the NCAA baseball tournament field. We'll get to that coming up. But we talk some football recruiting up next when we continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. It's a Tuesday here, coming off the holiday. Greg and Jeff with you. Do you have any trouble transitioning back into Tuesday here?
No, I'm good.
Good. We're all woke.
I think because Monday was technically a work day because of the selection show.
Yep.
All good.
Yeah, it's a way to, you know, ease right on into that and to do that, which gives us the opportunity to ease right on into the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
Which, of course, means our regular Monday installment, except pushed to Tuesday.
It is pushed to Tuesday, but let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline. We talk about easing into the week, Craig, and being busy. This guy is not easing into today because it is full bore recruiting. Recruiting has opened back up. The dead period that dated back to last March has ended. It ended at midnight, which means recruits can now visit campuses. So with that, we welcome in Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Mike Roach. Mike, has the phone been blowing up since 12:01 a.m.?
Not really. It's been kind of quiet, eerily quiet.
I did all that setup for nothing.
Yeah,
but is it kind of almost like when you have a tornado warning and everything gets real quiet and real still, but you can see the dark clouds on the horizon that all hell's about to break loose, that the skies are going to open wide up and all that sort of stuff? Is it almost kind of that expectation of what could happen?
Yeah, I think that's probably the best comparison for it. You know, I think that for me, I didn't expect, you know, really anything to erupt this morning. It'll be more, you know, heading into the weekend, I think we'll see a lot more activity. But I expect some guys to show up out of nowhere, and you know, then the phone will likely start ringing. But, you know, at this point, nothing real crazy going on.
Mike, let's talk about visitors. Who's going to be the answer to the trivia question? Who was the first official, unofficial, or otherwise visitor Texas will have hosted after the dead period ends?
Ooh, man, I feel like I could make some money in this way. Sorry, fellas, my radio's going crazy here. I think if I had to put money on it, it's probably DJ Hicks, who is headed in Thursday, the five-star offensive. Our defensive lineman, who's at Allen now. He's moving from Katie Morton Ranch to Allen. He's the guy I think I would probably say, but, you know, if somebody showed up, you know, it wouldn't totally surprise me at all. So my answer is going to be DJ Hicks, but I think look for some surprise visitors.
Okay, where I was going next was not necessarily surprise visitors, but can you give folks, Mike, an idea of how a weekend like this or a week like this is, as recruits come into town and going into the weekend, how it breaks down, how a coaching staff, you might say, pools yet divides its resources to make sure that everybody's taken care of, and what would you think the total number of volume would be this week in terms of visitors?
It's certainly tough because you want to be able to see as many people as possible, yet give somebody the most personal attention possible. So you've got to walk that line, and I think that's a big reason for that is that's a big reason why you have support staffs. I think that support staffs handle a lot of heavy lifting on these visits, especially for guys who aren't necessarily there on official. There may be guys who show up who don't have an offer, but, you know, they want to have a relationship with, and I think the support staff takes care of those types of guys. Where it really gets fun to watch them juggle is on big weekends. So, like, next weekend when they're going to have 6 or 7 official visitors and then, you know, 10 or 12 of the best 2023 players there, you know, that'll be the fun part, watching, you know, kind of how they juggle that. But it's a balancing act for sure. It's you never want to make a kid feel alienated while he's on your campus, but you also have to make sure you're getting around and seeing everybody.
Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Mike Roach joining us here on Light the Tower on the Horn. Mike, so there's, again, the stampede was posted yesterday, even on a holiday. Mike did not miss that deadline at 8 a.m., so you can get the Texas Summer Visit Mega Primer. It's at Horns 24/7 right now. Mike, one guy I wanted to ask you about, and I'm just fascinated by the position. I'm fascinated by this guy's prospects at linebacker, and that's one position that I think in the recruiting industry we're still trying to wrap our arms around and figure out what that looks like in terms of trying to project guys to college and then onto the NFL. Jeremy Patton at Tennehaw is a guy that's, you know, could play multiple positions at the next level. And let's be honest, I mean, Tennehaw, it's a trek. If you're going to Tennehaw, you're not passing through. You're going there for the day to cover.
Got to be headed in that direction.
Exactly. Mike, what do you know about Jeremy Patton, not just as a player and how he might fit into the plans for Texas, but just kind of where this recruitment stands? Because he's a guy that hasn't gotten a ton of buzz publicly.
Yeah, he's way out there. He's a kid I really love. I wrote an article last November, I think, while I was sitting in the press box at the small school state championship about 10 names that I believe didn't have an offer at the time but would become household names in 2022, and he was on that list. When you watch him play at Tenaha, it is small school level, but he is dominant. You know, he plays both sides of the ball, offense and defense, plays a receiver, plays a little bit of running back. He'll play linebacker and safety as well. But, you know, when looking at a guy like him, you love the ball skills, you love the athleticism, and the ability to move in space, and you can flip that around and play it at linebacker and make it work. You know, I think that the Texas staff loves his instincts and, you know, loves his kind of the way he plays. They feel like, you know, maybe he's not as athletic as a couple of other guys on the board from bigger schools, but he is a guy that they think is more of a natural fit at that position. So I think Texas has done a great job. They've kind of quietly put themselves in the driver's seat in this recruitment. He's coming in for a visit this weekend. It wouldn't totally shock me to see him come out of the weekend committed. I think he probably takes if Texas could close the deal, I think they could do it this weekend.
Mike, you and Jeff kind of alluded a little bit to the direction that I was going next, and that was going to be if you had to pick a specific recruit or recruitment visit this weekend that is more crucial than any other specific one to Sark and his staff and the program this weekend, if there's one specific one in your mind, which would that be?
I think it's got to be Derrick Brown from Texas High, Texarkana. He is, you know, Texas needs pass rushers. It's one of the bigger needs in the class, and Brown is one of the more natural edge guys that you'll see. I mean, he's a 6'3", 6'4", long, lanky, athletic, twitchy guy who's probably around 215 right now, but can play up around, 250, 255 at the optimal level. And, they're in a battle with Texas A&M and Oklahoma for his services. So, not only do you want to get him, you don't want him to go to one of those places. So this is a big weekend for them. They've been doing, everything they can to kind of put themselves in a good position there. It's a really tight race, I think. I'm really interested to see what the buzz is around Brown coming out of the weekend.
Mike, when we talk, and even when I talk on the show, one position group I'm fascinated by always is the offensive line, just to see kind of how that position comes together in recruiting. It is not scheduled to visit this weekend, but in that June 11th to the 13th window, you've got Cole Hudson, the four-star offensive guard out of Frisco, coming in that weekend. Mike, and I know we've kind of talked in general about kind of where things at with Kyle Flood and putting this thing together, but once one of these dominoes falls and one of these big name, offensive line recruits in the state, once they commit, do you think it could be a domino effect where things just really start happening after that? Or do you feel like these offensive linemen are maybe kind of on their own separate timelines?
I think they're on their own separate timelines, but it could look like a domino effect because a lot of their timelines will converge in July and August. So a lot of those guys want to get their visits out of the way early and make their decision going into the season. So it may look like a domino effect, but those guys are definitely doing it on their own. I would encourage everybody to go over to the website. I wrote another Stampede-linked article today, basically sorting out the offensive line recruiting board, because I've mentioned a couple times in the last few weeks that I think they're ahead of schedule where I feel they need to be. And as weird as it is to say with the way offensive line recruiting has gone over the past few years, it sounds like they're going to have to be a little bit picky with the way they get guys to make sure they're maximizing their numbers, but also, maximizing their talent. And so I've kind of sorted out the board, my level of confidence, and talked about numbers and where each guy fits. Cole Hudson, is right at the top of that board as a guard center prospect. One of the smarter kids I've ever covered. Just a really, really great kid. He's a former pro baseball player, played at Arizona State. So he's got athleticism in his family. And, one of the best coaches I know in the state of Texas told me that Hudson is the best offensive lineman he's ever seen. I'm coaching against him. So, you know, I think that that's a really important recruitment for Texas. And again, that's you're probably coming down to Texas and Oklahoma A&M in there as well. So it's another one of those cases of you certainly want the kid, but you don't want him to go somewhere else that could hurt you.
Real quick, Mike, we talked a lot about the missed opportunity for Texas in the 21 cycle with what was a really, really good crop of offensive linemen in the state in terms of missing out on the blue chip guys in the 24/7 Sports composite. If Texas lands three or four of these high-end guys in this class, can that, I don't want to say make up for it, but maybe cushion that blow of what they missed out on in the 21 cycle?
There's no making up for it, so right. I think that you just have to hope that going forward you just do the best you can. I mean, I think, you know, obviously the COVID year, getting a guy like Hurstetter back helps. It's a Band-Aid. That 2020 class, while it wasn't, you know, incredibly heralded, I think is going to really show in the end. You know, Jake Majors and Andre Karich have already made an impact on campus, and then Jalen Garth and Logan Parr, I think, will make it back. So that class is going to be better than I think a lot of people gave it credit for. I think that you can survive it. You know, the key is you just can't have too many more like it. So I think you really got to hit not only on numbers, the rankings, all that, but you've got to hit on your evaluations and hope that those guys are what you think they are.
He's Mike Roach. Catch his outstanding work at Orange 24/7. Hey, Mike, we appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the week, and even as it ramps up, I know how nutty it's going to get for you. But as always, we appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. Good to talk to you guys.
All right, that's Mike Roach.
Thanks, Mike.
And it will get nutty this week, won't it?
Yeah, it's going to be nuts. It's seriously. I don't want to say Sark and those guys are over there drinking out of a fire hose, but it's going to be wild.
And it'll be like that all across the country,
yeah,
won't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Coming up next, we'll have our inconceivable segment for you when we continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Daniel.
Inconceivable.
You came here in the Horn. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means it's always brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his staff at Austin Orthopedics, where Dr. Crawford and his staff specialize in the prevention as well as the treatment of sports-related injuries. For more information, check them out on the web at austin-orthopedics.com. Okay.
I'll tell you what's inconceivable, yeah. Greg, this badass chair we've got in the studio now, thanks to one Bucky Godbolt.
How about that? Yeah, you liking that?
I don't need to run the risk of it smelling like someone has a decade of farts in it. It's not broken.
That's good.
It's a nice, good, sturdy chair.
Good way to start the week as well. You guys are pizza guys, right? You like pizza?
Look at me. Yes, I'm a pizza guy.
Okay. Snoop, are you a thick crust guy, a thin crust guy, a hand tossed guy? What are you?
The thick pan.
You like pan?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
It's going to depend. For me, it's going to depend on who's making it. You know?
Okay. Well, to let you know, we always like to update everybody, ourselves included, because we're all fast food junkies, the three of us. So we do like to update people whenever there's a fast food updated item to bring. Let you know, Pizza Hut's bringing back a different pizza. I don't know if you remember this one. It was called The Edge. The Edge. It's one of its most famous pizzas, but it's been gone for more than a decade. Kind of like the Chicken Whopper. It's been gone for more than a decade.
Hell, Burger King can't get their S together, but Pizza Hut apparently can. So
The Edge is the deal that it first released in 97, made a few rare appearances since then. The most recent re-release came back in 2009. So it's a cracker-thin crust that is sturdy enough to hold several toppings and is cut into 16 squares. Okay? Comes in four varieties, three of which have various types of meats.
You're telling me square pizza, so I'm already interested.
Okay. I mean, this is what it looks like there.
I was thinking, Snoop, you know that lunchroom pizza back in the day that was like rectangle shaped?
Yeah, you're thinking of that. That's what you had in mind. The big old rectangle.
Dang, I'm hungry.
If there was a restaurant that just made cafeteria pizza, I would go there for lunch right now. If you told me there's a place like that in Austin, I'd go there for lunch today.
You know, it's funny you brought that up because the media food that was at the Big 12 baseball tournament, by and large, was uneatable, just inedible.
I can't believe they had food.
Yeah, I was surprised by that, and it was awful. Some of it was. So I passed on about 90% of it. They did have hamburgers one day at lunch.
Okay.
So I tried, and somebody said, "How's that hamburger?" I said, "It's a high school cafeteria hamburger." Somebody else said, "It's exactly what it was. It's a high school cafeteria hamburger."
Craig getting down in the Oklahoma City press box on Hamburger Friday.
That's exactly what it was there.
What day was Hamburger Day in DeSoto, Snoop? I think ours in Florence was Wednesday.
Well, Tuesday was definitely chicken fried steak day.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we went through that when we were talking about high school cafeteria food, school cafeteria food. But, yeah. Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you about this, and then I'm going to let you look at the picture. Okay. There's a house going on sale in Houston. It's 7,000 square feet. It's in the West University Place subdivision with a listing price of $4.3 million.
That means it'll go for about $7
million. Yeah, probably so. 18,000 square foot lot as well. So, but here's the deal. I mean, there's lots of expensive houses being sold. But how many houses look like Darth Vader's helmet?
Ooh,
the house. It's known as the Darth Vader house.
Why would you do that?
In Houston.
That looks pretty sweet. I like it.
It's the Darth Vader home.
It's definitely different.
Yeah, there it is.
You can project Chancellor Palpatine on the side of the house if you want to get real crazy.
Your father made a wise investment in the Darth Vader house.
Whoever built that house was not thinking about resale value. It's a very, very niche audience, Craig, that would be in the market for that house.
And now, young Skywalker, you will invest and empty your bank account.
Anyway, it was.
You can do. You can be a realtor and do Star Wars impressions and be successful.
That's right.
Refinance now or lose everything you have to the dark side of home finance.
Anyway, so there's that. Okay. Speaking of kind of inconceivable things with home, we've talked about a lot of shortages on things during the course over the past year. At times, there were shortages of meat. Remember the story about the guy in the supermarket had me? He was worried about his meat, not the COVID. They said he was always buying the meat there. He was worried about my meat, not the COVID. There was shortages of what? Toilet paper, paper towels,
hand sanitizer.
Here's Clorox something wipes. I hadn't heard.
Yeah.
There's been a shortage of porta-potties. Porta-potties. That's right. After more than a year of staying at home, avoiding crowds and other COVID-19 precautions, there are many Americans who are looking forward to a summer of festivals, concerts, road races, and other large events. So when you have those big outdoor events, what do you need? Porta-potties. You got to have them, right?
Yeah.
Well, that has porta-potty suppliers and manufacturers scrambling to try to make sure they have enough toilets to go around. Troyana Waste Services, a family-owned liquid and solid waste company based in Portland, Maine, ordered 100 new portable toilets in March to add to its fleet of between 1,500 and 2,000 porta-potties. The company's hoping they'll be ready to ship next week, but they say there's high demand for workers and truck drivers as well, so you've got a recipe for a challenging environment there, according to the president of Satellite Industries, which is a leading producer of portable toilets, restroom trailers, and other related supplies.
Restroom trailers?
Yeah. You've ever seen those? They used to have those, I remember, and they probably had it this past weekend at the Colonial, where you got to go up the steps and you go in there and it's air conditioned.
It's really nice.
So it's as nice a portable toilet situation as you could ever go in.
They have them in the media section at ACL Fest every year.
Yeah. So those are nice.
That sounds kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Those portable restroom trailers.
Kind of place that makes you proud to go in and use your business? Or
yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Exactly.
I'll have to try one of those before. That's got to be a bucket list item for me now.
Okay. I should let you know. This one, the fiance passed along to me. What was the most vilified name over the last year?
Oh.
No. I don't mean person. I just mean the name in general. A person's name.
Yeah. I wouldn't know where
Karen.
To start.
Thank you, Karen.
right? Oh, okay.
I don't use that term, by the way.
You don't? No. Okay. Well, apparently enough have that the name Karen plummeted in popularity in 2020. Talking about baby names.
Who's naming their kids Karen anyway?
For example, baby names don't tend to move too dramatically on the popularity list from one year to the next, but there are notable exceptions. Katrina and Isis, for example, fell off the top 1,000 ranking.
What the hell's the name of their kid? Isis?
Isis. Isis, yeah.
Katrina, I can see.
Yeah, that one makes sense.
But after the hurricane, it fell off the list, right?